Good evening, everyone. We're going to head straight into your COVID-19 local update.
We're going to hold until after the COVID-19 update, and then we will have you speak at that point right before the assembly takes the matter up. So moving on to item A, City Manager Von Bargen, would you please give us a COVID-19 update?
Certainly, Mr. Mayor. Thank you very much. So I'm very excited to, if there is something exciting in the dawn of COVID-19 that I can discuss, but I'm excited to report that the Nolan Center, Parks and Rec facilities, and the library are preparing to open. The Nolan Center will be opening first Tuesday, May 26th, the Tuesday following the Memorial Day holiday, and they actually will be showing their first movie May 29th through 31st. And I want to caution people that things are going to look different. There's going to be a lot of rules, and so stay tuned for all of those. The library will be opening June 1st. Again, I want to caution people that we are not able to return to business as usual in order to make sure that we are keeping our facilities clean and able to social distance and all of those good things. And we are in the process of getting fixtures and things installed that allow for more touchless experience in our facilities, specifically as it relates to entrances and exits and bathroom facilities. The recreation facility will be opening June 1st, and the pool will be reopening on June 8th, again with phased programming. And when it comes to community rec programs, especially the summer rec program, things are going to have to look very, very different. And so to that end, the Parks and Rec Board will be taking public comment. They want to have a community discussion about this. That'll be on May 27th. And so we encourage people to stay tuned for that. The Parks and Rec Director will be getting information out on that, information on how to participate in that discussion today. That'll be coming out tonight. We had a good meeting today with American Cruise Line. There were a number of us from the city EOC that participated in a call with them about midday today. There were four representatives from American Cruise Line, including some of their medical consultants that they're working with. And I notice a couple of them are on tonight as well for this meeting. And we had an opportunity to hear from them about what their plans are in preparing to try to come back to Alaska cruising. And they spent some time on some Q&A with us about some of our concerns and just questions. And I believe Mike Olivo, who is on the phone tonight, is intending to speak from American Cruise. Holly Love, one of their medical consultants, is also on, but I'm not sure if she's planning to speak. But anyway, we did have a good discussion with them this afternoon. Mr. Mayor, do you mind if I speak to the ambulance?
Please go ahead. Thanks, Lisa.
So it's become apparent that, as the Assembly is aware, we have been making sure that our local healthcare capacity issues are understood and trying to make sure that the weak links in that or the deficiencies that we have are being addressed. It became very apparent over the weekend that one of our weak links is with our ambulances. We only have two of them, and one of them is reserved as necessary for what we call a screen positive COVID response. So if someone who calls for emergency assistance answers yes to any of the screening questions for COVID-19, that's a screen positive call. Again, that doesn't mean that somebody has COVID-19, but the disinfection and the sanitizing that has to take place in the ambulance following a positive screen call can take up to 3 hours. It can take up to 2 hours just for anything aerosolized to settle down onto the surfaces so that it can then be decontaminated or sanitized. And so what that means is we have an ambulance completely offline for up to 3 hours anytime there's a positive screen COVID-19 call. And this weekend we ended up having a positive screen call with an ambulance out of commission, and then we ended up with a trauma that had more than one victim in it that needed to be transported. And so what we have found ourselves in is the inability to respond to a significant accident or a significant trauma event in at the same time that we're dealing with COVID things. And we're getting ready to come into the point of reopening where more and more people are coming in as the fishing season continues to ramp up. And as we are starting to get visitors coming to town via air and via boat, and if cruise season should start to happen in Southeast this summer at any point in time, we will be stressing our capacity even further just with general calls. And so having one ambulance out of commission is really not an option. So we checked with the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development today, ran the scenario by them and said, is this a reasonable consideration? And although this canned response is each municipality, each recipient of funding has to determine what is appropriate for them. They're not going to give us a hard yes or no. They responded that this absolutely seems reasonable. And one thing that the guidance is from OMB and from the feds is that planning for the next surge, mitigating for what might happen to come, is absolutely something you are able to do. And being able to have ambulance capabilities and capacity is one of those things. So that's something that we're looking at right now, because we want to make sure that we're prepared to handle things the rest of the season and into the future. So that's something that you can expect us to be bringing back to you in the very near future. Mr. Mayor, would you like to speak to what we're affectionately recalling now the COVID condo, that is code for the alternate isolation site?
Yes, I will. We identified early on that we needed to have capacity within the community to have people that test positive but are asymptomatic to be able to shelter in a safe manner if they don't have upland residents. So the best example I can give you is somebody on a same boat comes into town, and for some reason they wind up getting tested, they test positive. They can't go back out on the same boat. They need to stay in Wrangell. They can't leave by charter, or can't leave by Alaska Airlines. They can't leave by the ferry. They're here. And we have one hotel, so Jake doesn't necessarily want these people in the hotel. And we need to have a place where they can shelter safely. And so we had determined that this would be an ideal use of our CARES Act money to create a facility for anyone. And this might include some of the homeless people that we do have in town as well that test positive and need to do their 2-week in quarantine. And so we've worked with Trident and have been able to work towards securing one of the bunkhouses. And I'm just in conversations with Nick Omer right now out of Petersburg to secure everything and come up with sort of the legal angles and the additional insured and all that sort of thing that we need to do. And I'm hopeful that within the next 2 weeks, we're going to be able to have that facility available for not just fishermen, but anyone who might need it. And that might include a resident who, say, lives in a small house with one bathroom and this one person comes down with it and they can't adequately isolate away from the other person. So we'll have this able to help out community members as well. But I think it's crucial to our response. And we had a couple of missing pieces. One of those was the hospital and capacity. And I think that CERCH has done a good job of mitigating that. And we're going to hear more about that Tuesday night at our meeting. This facility to be able to take care of people without upland residents. And then the final piece is the ambulance, which we knew EMS capacity was limited because of the ambulance. So these three things have worked out nicely, and I'm feeling a lot better about where we're at today than where we were at 2 months ago in terms of the community's capacity to deal with an outbreak. Should have more news by the end of next week, I hope.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and I appreciate that segue. I actually had on my list, too, that Dr. Prezanka will be is on the agenda for our Tuesday meeting to talk about the changes to the hospital's surge plan. And then the harbor master and Jamie Roberts, who's working a number of different issues for us on the COVID front work together to come up with a set of local NOTAMs, I guess I would say, for folks entering into the harbor and getting in touch with the harbor master and filling out any paperwork that's necessary and making sure that anybody that's coming in from out of state has the ability to quarantine or is quarantining and will have a Lima flag to fly. The harbor master's making arrangements for those to be sewn here locally. We've got information to go to boaters coming in who may need to have groceries or supplies delivered to them. They're providing a packet of safety stuff to folks so that they've got gloves and things if they need to use to turn on any of the community faucets or things to get water or what have you. And so that has been developed. And then I think...
Lisa, can I apologize. Julie, I'm sorry I missed your hand there. I just don't want us to get too far away from where your question would have wound up. Please go ahead with your question.
Thanks. So it actually was back on the ambulance item. So I'm inferring that you didn't quite say it outright. Are you talking about like purchasing a third ambulance?
Indeed. Thank you for having me clarify the punchline there. Yes. And we would be, because it's something we need now and we can't, we're not pre-ordering an ambulance to be custom made. This is one that we would buy off of a lot. It would be a new ambulance, but it's one that we would buy off a lot ready to go so that it can be shipped up here sometime, in the next 2-3 weeks.
Okay. And then I just wanted, in the last conversation about the isolation facility, I kind of wanted to point out, make sure that it's clear the terminology we use. So these would be people in isolation because they've either tested positive or they're waiting for their test results and they may be positive, which is different than quarantine. And it may be for some people splitting hairs, but it's important differentiation to make.
But it wouldn't be people who are waiting for test results. If you're waiting for a test result, you don't want to be hanging out with all the people who have tested positive. If you're waiting for a test result, unless they use the rapid test. So, and my guess, Julie, is that anybody that, more than likely at this point with the quantity of rapid tests that are available, when we were short, we had a real inventory problem with the rapid tests all across the state. Now, I think the network is fairly flush with the tests and they go to them much more often and then do a secondary PCR, so a send-out test after that. So I think we hopefully won't have to wait very long, but and we may have to divide the facility into a standby area and a positive area, if that makes sense. But they are quarantined from the rest of the community. They are positive for COVID and they are quarantined. They're not allowed to leave their area and at all.
Isolated.
I don't really understand why you would not use the word quarantine, but maybe.
I actually looked it up online and the correct term is isolation. I can't remember what the difference is, but I specifically looked it up previously.
Not in Canada. I'm going with the Canadian rule here. That's good. It will be isolated.
So one more follow up on the isolation facility. Do you have a specific place and you know how many units would be in it?
We don't, we think we know, but I don't want to say yet because Nick is still working on that. So he made a suggestion that sounded very appropriate, but I know that one of the other facilities is also spoken for. So we're waiting to see which one they're able to offer us. Assemblymember Larrabee, you have your hand up?
Yes, so to piggyback on Assemblymember Decker's question, the new ambulance that you're looking at purchasing, would that be purchased out of the CARES Act funds as well?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Any other questions for anyone before we move on? Lisa, I think it's all you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to let the Assembly know that we received the grant agreement for our CARES funding. It actually is 3.851 million and change. That is on the agenda for us to, or for the Assembly to approve on Tuesday's meeting. The other thing I wanted to let the Assembly know is that the third installment of the newsletter from the Reopen Wrangell Responsibly Task Force came out yesterday or the day before. And the newsletter includes some helpful hints about Memorial Day and being safe on Memorial Day. And in addition to that, today there was an insert in the newspaper very similar to that, just a friendly reminder, helpful reminder for people that they could have as a quick reference guide to keep themselves safe for the weekend. And I think, Mr. Mayor, that's, I guess one other thing that I would say has become a question here in Southeast specifically, and we're waiting for an answer on, given that there have been a number of positive tests in correctional facilities around the state, the question has come up is, as community jail operators, are we able to require that someone coming in for incarceration is required to be tested so that we know, so that we can make sure that our people who are working with and managing the jail and just anybody coming into contact with that person who's in incarcerated is safe. And so we are waiting for an answer on that, but just something that we're dealing with behind the scenes here. And I think, Mr. Mayor, that's it. I don't want to put her on the spot. I think Captain Spray is on the line, and I don't know if she's got anything else she'd like to add.
Captain Spray.
I am on the line, and I would love to add a couple different things. With our grand reopening, Reopen Wrangell Responsibly, the state just put out about 30 minutes ago, their Reopen Alaska Responsibly Phase 3 and 4 guidelines. So if you have a moment to look at that, it is 12 pages long. And it just talks about some individual actions that they're asking for folks to take, as well as some business responsibility actions. In that, there are a couple health mandates. If you've hung out on the COVID-19 state website, there's some health mandates that are still in effect. And this guideline that they put out speaks to some of those, being health mandate 10, which is interstate travel, health mandate 14, which is the non-congregate sheltering is not discussed in this, but that is still in effect. 15, which is still in effect, and it does speak to it regarding healthcare services, like being tested prior to going to the dentist and certain other procedures. Health mandate 17, which speaks to the fishing industry, which is also still in effect. And health mandate 18 for intrastate travel is still in effect. In it, it talks about, it encourages communities to look at mitigation measures and considering whether or not you're a high-risk community, and specifically thinking about certain aspects. Are we a long-term care? Do we have a long-term care facility? Do we have a seafood processing plant? What proportion of our community is 65 and older? Do we have, what proportion have underlying health conditions? And some of these items to look at as we reopen our community, things to keep in mind there. There was discussion, I believe, that was the last COVID update about the water treatment plant testing. And just to give you guys an update there, Andrew Scambler from the water treatment plant looked into some different options, and that it sounds like is pushed back until June from the main testing facility site. their program is at capacity right now. And so there are a couple other programs we're still waiting to hear back from. So there right now isn't any movement on that. So again, the Reopen Alaska Responsibly is out there. Their guidelines as they're moving away from mandates and putting it back into the local community for our own responsibility to reopen our community. So if you have a chance to look at that, that is up.
Thanks very much, Dorianne. Appreciate it. Does anybody have any questions? Lisa, one question I have is, given that the CARES Act monies were delayed from the state, are we still under the same time frame for expenditure to the 80% level?
Yes. So they are not sure when the first tranche of funds is going to be released, probably sometime in the next couple of weeks. And prior to requesting the second and third tranche of funds, we are required to have spent down the 80% of the previous sums of money that we received. And all of the, everything has to be expended or has to be paid for. I need to get some clarification as to when final bills have to be paid, but the CARES Act only covers things through December of 2020.
And then, sorry, Julie, I'll get right to you just for the follow-up there. The if you miss the first, under the first tranche of funds, if you miss the 80% level by the expiration date, so you would not be eligible for the second, but there's also a third proposed. Would you miss out on the second and be allowed to, if you'd spent the 80% level, to participate in the third?
Mr. Mayor, my understanding is there isn't a deadline as to when you have to request those. Once you spend down the 80%, then you can ask for the second tranche. And if you spend down 80% of the second, even though they have a schedule as to when they want to, when they're planning to issue those, if you haven't spent it by the time that the reissue or the issue time frame comes, when you are spent down, you can request it.
Okay.
What they are asking people to do, though, is that if it appears it, once we start getting into the October time frame, if it appears that you are not going to be able to spend your full amount of money, they are asking that you let the state know so that that money can be reallocated to communities who have the ability to spend it or who, you know, didn't get enough to take care of their needs to begin with.
Perfect. Thank you. Julie, Assemblymember Decker.
Yeah, I wanted to just mention a couple of things. The Economic Development Committee has met twice this week and is fleshing out some of the recommendations that we're making to the Assembly for our Tuesday meeting. In general, we were trying to make some initial recommendations, recognizing there's like some unknowns around the CARES money and how it can be spent. So those will be coming in the packet, I believe, for the Assembly.
That's correct.
And then UFA is having another webinar for fishermen to ask questions about Health Mandate 17. It'll be next Wednesday at 10 a.m., and I can forward the link to the clerk if anyone's interested in finding out more about that. You have to register, but there's no charge. It's free. And then I wanted to mention Health Mandate 10, as we've previously talked about, was revised for seafood processing workers to require testing as well as monitoring during the quarantine period for seafood processing workers. So it's basically strengthening that quarantine piece. And as of yesterday, seven people have tested positive that were going through that quarantine. Some of them was on their first test, some were on their second test. None of them had contact with the community because the processors were working through their plan. So it basically worked to identify those people and keep them separate from the community and move them out. Some of them never got to a community, some of them were in hubs. So anyway, I think it's showing it's working, that's positive. It's also showing that some of the folks coming into the state don't have signs, but they are positive. So something to keep in mind. Thank you.
Thanks, Julie. That's an interesting point. We need to up the pressure on sea level or the government or whoever, the state government, to get us their plan. We know that this is happening soon and we have no idea. I know that we've reached out to sea level with testing and Julie brings up an excellent point. Are they planning to the difference between isolation and quarantine. Their quarantine, are they planning on doing a modified quarantine where they're going to work? Because they'll have other people from the community working at that plant who will be coming back into the community. So we have not seen that plan yet. And I think it's vital that we know what they're thinking, because Julie's right. We're seeing these cases being caught because they're doing it a certain way. And if we've modified that process, that worries me. Julie, go ahead.
Well, I just want to explain a little bit. The state's new revisions to Health Mandate 10, they have three options for quarantine for safety processing workers. And they supersede any of the plans that were submitted by processors because they're more strict. And so the processor basically has to pick one of those three options. I think it is worth a conversation with our seafood processing plant, in particular to make sure that they've got testing capacity that will meet their needs when they need it for their processing workers. And then the other piece that hasn't had a lot of discussion, but I think as we move through both reopening Alaska and through summer season, the idea of, you know, what is appropriate sort of continued testing to monitor the situation, whether it's at processing plants or other businesses that see lots of customers. So,
and Julie, Lynn, a couple of things tonight. Lynn, we know Lynn sent through a letter as medical director to Lisa yesterday, Lisa, or the day before, I can't remember.
No, it's been a couple of days, Mr. Mayor, with the name of a person at search for sea level seafoods to get a hold of. I requested the phone number for that person, and I'm waiting to get that.
I sent it through to you.
The phone number?
Oh, I thought I did. Let me go back and look. Were you requested that from Letha?
I did.
Okay. Yeah, that was a mess up because Lynn sent that through to me and then I just sent it directly through to you. And I guess she was CC'd on the original. So there was her email address. I'll fix that for you immediately. The second thing that's interesting, Assemblymember Decker, is that tonight Lynn reported that Wrangell has been identified as one of the communities that's going to be receiving for its lab the ability to do the tests that normally we have to send out for. And some of the mediums for that. So the search got two of those machines, and one is going to Sitka and one is coming to Wrangell. So that's going to change things up a bit as well. So we should have increased testing capacity. But I'm not sure if it's been specifically identified for fisheries or how that all works, but I'm sure that there can be some crossover with that. So that's, you know, our capacity is growing by the minute for the community. So that's also another really good turn of events for us.
Mr. Mayor, I don't have anything else that hasn't already been covered by others. I see that Greg and Carol are on the line. I don't know if there's anything I've missed that they want to mention.
Greg or Carol, anything else for the COVID update for us?
No, I'm good.
Greg? Mr. Meisner?
Hey, yeah, phone was fighting me. No.
Did you get that?
Greg, I think your kids must be on the internet tonight. We're losing you. You're in and out.
Okay, I'll try to get a better location here. Come on, oh, I'm on my phone.
Are you there, Greg?
Yeah, you have me, Steve? You have me now.
We got you. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, I think we got you now. Go ahead.
No, I say I'm fine. It sounded good. Nothing to add at this point.
I hope you didn't have to walk too far to tell us that. All good then. We'll move along. Thank you very much, Greg. Thanks, everyone. And thank you, Lisa, for that update. We're going to move on to item B, if there's nothing else for the COVID-19 update, a small cruise ship discussion. Just a little bit of history on this. I had requested that this take place. We had not had at any point a discussion about the cruise ship season, mostly because we were working under the assumption that the season would be starting very late or not at all. And in the last meeting that I participated in on small ships, it was stated by an industry rep, and Carol, I can't remember who the man was, but he had stated that he didn't feel there would be anything happening this year, and if anything did, there may be some sort of originating in Juneau and finishing in Juneau, but just sort of putting around southeast and not really landing anywhere.
Mr. Mayor, that was Dan Blanchard from the Passenger Vessel Association.
Thank you, Mr. Blanchard. And so as part of Carol's due diligence reaching out, we discovered that American Cruise Lines, which is an American-based cruise ship company with all American crew, and their ships are also all built in America, they had expressed interest in coming to Wrangell, and initially we thought mid-June. Last week it had looked like it was sort of mid-June, and although that's been changed now to later in June. And so we wanted to have a discussion, and we had an opportunity to meet with the officials who and their medical team this afternoon and ask a few questions. But I want the assembly to have an opportunity and the community to have an opportunity to weigh in on this prior to sort of moving forward with, I guess, securing dates and having folks come. And I wanted also definitely for industry and community members to have that opportunity. So I'm going to do under our persons to be heard at this point. I know there are some people on the line that wanted to speak. So if the clerk could call on the first person that you have on your list, please.
Sure. So the first person, actually, it's a letter from Jim Leslie, who is the president of the Stikine River Jet Boat Association. And if I can, Mr. Mayor, read his letter.
I see that Mr. Leslie is on the line. Jim, did you want to read your own letter or just have the clerk read it into the minutes here?
Go ahead and have the clerk read it into the minutes.
Thanks, Jim. Go ahead, Kim.
Okay. Okay. To the City and Borough Assembly, Mayor Steve Prasanka, City Manager Lisa Von Bargen, reference the Keene River Jet Boat Association position on cruise ship stops in 2020. The Stikine River Jet Boat Association represents five separate charter boat companies for shore excursions to various cruise ship companies. We have been in business for 27 years providing tours and excursions for the cruise ship industry in Wrangell. We have been effectively wiped out for the 2020 tour season due to the coronavirus pandemic. We all live in Wrangell and have lived here for most, if not all, of our lives. Wrangell is our home and where we raise our families. With regard to whether or not cruise ships should be allowed to tie up in Wrangell in 2020, our position is this. Point one, our highest priority is the health and well-being of our community. Point two, we are ready and willing to work if and when the time comes. And point three, we respect the decisions made by the state and community leadership with regard to whether or not ships should tie up in Wrangell in 2020, and we'll plan our business activities according to their guidelines. Thank you, Jim Leslie, President, Stikine River Jet Boat Association.
Thank you, Mr. Leslie, for that letter and the Stikine River Jet Boat Association for your input tonight. Next on your list, Kim.
I have Mike Olivo from American Cruise Lines. He's on the line, and I'm not sure if he wants to speak now or if he's asked questions.
I think Mike, why don't you give us sort of a statement, please, and we'll maybe have an opportunity for questions directly as we go along. But why don't you give us sort of an update right now to start with?
Yeah, absolutely. So good evening, Assembly members and community members of Wrangell. We appreciate you giving us this opportunity to speak. We have been in talks with members of your community to try to return to operations this year. You know, we're committed to certainly partnering with the community and only returning when it is in fact safe. We have been developing our own protocols to manage our experience on the ship. And I understand that in Southeast Alaska, the communities are working together to put together a list of protocols. We plan to look at those protocols and ensure that ours are in line with yours. I know based on our conversation we had earlier today with community members in Wrangell, we will be presented with that when those protocols are finalized so that we can review them and make any adjustments to our operating plans. I do have on the line Viken, they're our medical consulting partner, Holly Love, who's the VP of Medical Operations, and Dr. Edward Dees, both of which can answer more of the medical questions you may have. We understand this is a working session for you to discuss the possibility of having us return. I know we were perhaps aggressive in our original dates, trying to get into mid-June. We have since adjusted that to the end of June. Certainly don't want to push our way into the community. We want to be welcomed, but we're dedicated to returning to service, letting our guests experience the beauty of Southeast Alaska and contributing to the communities in Southeast Alaska that we visit. So our intention here is really just to be on the call as you have your discussion. If there's anything that we can answer or contribute, we're happy to do so. We just appreciate your time. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, you're muted.
Sorry about that, Michael. Thank you very much. Could I just ask for a clarification on the pronunciation of your last name?
Yeah, so my last name is Olivo.
Olivo?
Olivo, yeah. Very very simple, but it's Olivo. I went to high school with a kid, and his last name was Stanislawski, and everyone could get that name right, but Olivo was a challenge. I'm not bitter about it, you know, several years later.
Thank you, Mr. Olivo. Kim, next on our list.
That's all I have on my list.
Oh, I thought we had Caitlin Cardinal calling in to speak.
I did confirm with her a little bit ago, and she said that the letter from Mr. Leslie was the official statement for the Stikine River Jet Boat Association, so she did not need to speak.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate that, Kim. Okay, so Lisa, I'm going to kick it over to you. I sort of did a little preamble of how we wound up here. I would just give the guidance to the assembly that I would like this to remain, although we have American Cruise Lines on the line, and they are the first company that have expressed interest, I'd like us to keep the discussion relatively general, if at all possible, and it's neither appropriate nor would it be following sort of our parliamentary procedure to be making a decision within this workshop for the anything to do with the pending dates for American Cruise Lines, and I would really want us to bring that up in an assembly meeting with administrative guidance. But I just wanted to give everybody an opportunity to ask questions as they felt appropriate and for Lisa to guide us through a process here. Thank you.
Certainly, Mr. Mayor. Just the other thing I will bring up, what was in the packet tonight as an attachment to the agenda statement related to this is a draft letter that the Alaska Municipal League put together as a summary of the discussions that the Southeast cruise ports have come together to have. And this, it is the intention to get this out to the cruise industry and to the state of Alaska to understand what we as a group of ports are hoping to see. Essentially, what the letter does is it calls for a moratorium on small ship cruising until a set of jointly agreed upon protocols can be established between the industry and between communities. And the purpose of that is, one, to make sure that everybody is safe, not only the residents of Southeast, but also our visitors coming in by cruise ship and the crews on them. But also to make sure that cruise lines and passengers understand what there is expected of them coming into the ports, and ports understand what the cruise ships are supposed to be doing, what their protocols are when they come into port, so that there's an understanding, so that things aren't different across the board in every port that they come to. There's also an acknowledgement that there may need to be some additional items in each port, just simply because of the different circumstances there. But generally, that is the feeling of the group of ports in Southeast. Now, that is of those of us who've been on the discussions, representatives, elected officials, and managers, and port directors, harbor masters from these different communities. We understand fully that the assemblies and the councils in our different communities are going to need to weigh into this. And to that end, this letter is on the agenda for consideration by the assembly on Tuesday's meeting. We do not have an item specifically, and I know the mayor cautioned us, we need to make sure that this conversation that we're having tonight is in general about cruise ship traffic, or at least small cruise ship traffic right now. But if we need to take some specific action related to American Cruise Line, we will need to do that at a meeting.
Assemblymember DeLong.
Yeah, just for definition, what is a small cruise ship? Is it by length or passenger capacity? How many passengers are we talking?
I think Carol may need to jump in here, but I think by default we are calling small ships any that fall under the CDC guidelines right now of 250 or less.
Carol, did you want to clarify that?
No, that's correct. That's what we typically use. I think that's the state's cutoff for the CPV funds as well. So that's typically what we consider the small ones.
Sorry, Assemblymember Decker, were you trying to say something?
Sorry, is that 250 total passengers on board, including crew, or?
I believe it's including crew. Carol, do you want to confirm for me?
Sorry, no, I don't believe it includes the crew. I think it's passengers.
Okay.
So a couple of things that I can report from our discussion today. First of all, I really appreciated American Cruise Line being on the line and answering our questions. And I have concerns about how we go about doing this activity, just like I had concerns about processors and out of town fishermen coming in and folks from elsewhere visiting. One of my ongoing concerns is the ability for passengers who, let's say they come off the ship and for whatever reason they wind up at our hospital and they test and it comes back positive. Where does that person go? Because now we have a positive person who's in town and they can't leave by Alaska Airlines. And the cruise ship had mentioned that they would take them back onto the cruise ship and sail. And I mentioned that to Lynn tonight on our walk. And she raised that she didn't feel that might not be possible through her discussions with the medical directors in the region, that there was a feeling that once a person is off a ship and if they test positive, they may not be able to go back on. So I'd asked Captain Spray to look at that and to follow up on that. And Dorianne, do you want to discuss that?
Sure. On the CDC's website regarding quarantine and maritime recommendations for ships, it specifically states management of sick passengers or crew when boarding and on board. And the first sentence there does say deny boarding of a passenger or crew member who is suspected to have COVID-19 infection based on signs, symptoms, plus travel history in China or other known exposure at the time of embarkation. So as I read that, I know the mayor and I both were curious if embarkation meant the original, place of origin where they first got on that ship. And so, again, we looked up that definition and it just means getting onto the ship. So as I see that, if that person came with signs and symptoms and either were tested on the ship and then that test swab was ran in our community, or if they got off and were seen at our medical center and tested positive, that passenger would be denied boarding of the cruise ship. Reboarding of that cruise.
And so if they're sick, we know that if they're sick, they can be transferred to a higher level of care via a medevac to Sitka or Juneau or Seattle or wherever it might be. So they're not tying up resources, because one of our concerns is that if for whatever reason we have 10 people or whatever at the COVID condo, and all of a sudden those cases convert to being symptomatic, and for whatever reason we're overrun regionally or whatever, we know our capacity to be able to render care is limited. So we have to be cautious with those resources. But I don't know if there's a way around that. And then the question that I would have is, would that ship become then quarantined or isolated because they now have active COVID patients on that ship? So if a ship came in from Petersburg with people who had come up positive, they could land in Wrangell. So it raises some questions for me in terms of how we manage that end of it. I don't know how, Ms. Love, are you on the line right now? Could you unmute Ms. Love for me? Hello. Thank you. Have you guys addressed that at all?
We have internationally, yes.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Holly Love and I am a nurse, and I'm Vice President of Medical Operations for VCAN Solutions, and we are the medical manager for American Cruise Line. So thanks for having me here tonight. And Dr. Deese is on the call as well, our medical director. So he is also may want to participate on this question. We really follow in terms of the larger ocean going cruise vessels with the CDC. And when they come into the United States waters, we fall under the CDC. Those ships fall under the CDC jurisdiction. And if there is a ship that comes in with a fever of unknown origin, potential COVID-like illness, that has to be reported to the in those ships, the CDC. Health officials need to be informed of that. And those then to determine if they have COVID on board or not, testing has to happen. A ship can get put into quarantine, yes, depending on the local health authorities and how they potentially want to manage that vessel under the CDC jurisdiction. Now, this is a smaller cruise line that falls under the Coast Guard jurisdiction, as I understand it. And so those rules might vary a little bit or differently, but certainly, if we had a person under investigation, as they call it, it's called a PUI, and we don't have testing yet to confirm if indeed it's COVID or not, contact tracing has to happen on board rapidly and put people into quarantine until we can determine, A, if it's COVID or not, and B, if it is, certainly quarantine individuals who could potentially have been exposed to the disease. So a lot would depend on the local health authorities in that situation.
Hi, this is Dr. Deese. Just to follow up with Holly there, in terms of determination about whether a ship is going to be quarantined, I think any public health authority locally and the CDC, what they're going to be most concerned with is what has happened in the environment on board once it's been identified that somebody's been ill. And part of the plan that we're developing with American is to have a rigorous and robust plan to address the fact that people present with COVID-like illness is basically similar to an influenza-like illness, which is a presentation of the fever, a cough, sore throat, things that are kind of indistinguishable from things that happen in the community like an influenza. And when these cases are identified on board, there are isolation procedures that are put in place and the like. And that's what they're going to be interested in terms of making determination of whether you have a case, which is a person under investigation, a PUI, or you have a sick ship, which is really the things that they're most concerned about and would render the ship itself to be quarantined if it appears that the measures taken on board are not sufficient enough to control an outbreak.
Mr. Mayor, you're muted.
Yes. Okay, there we go. Thank you, Doctor, and thank you, Holly. Just a quick, Julie, if you don't mind, I just want, before I get to your question, just a quick follow-up with you, Doctor. The question that we have is that if a person comes into the community and is for some reason tested at the local facility, which is our local critical access hospital, and they come up as positive, originally when I raised this question in today's workshop, it was determined that that person would re-embark on the cruise ship and then would travel on the cruise ship. And what our local medical director here said was that it was her understanding that that person cannot re-enter onto the cruise ship once they've been tested positive. And we had our captain of EMS look into it, and CDC says that if a person with symptoms of COVID or a positive test, I would assume would be the major symptom, they cannot re-enter the cruise ship. So they would then be in the community until we would have to find a way to accommodate them within the community. And if they weren't sick enough to be in the hospital, they would have to be at our facility or a facility here. Is that your understanding, sir?
Yes, that would be my understanding. But we have to come back to the basic, understanding that we're talking about somebody who's presenting to a medical facility. Are they presenting to a medical facility because they're ill, or is this an asymptomatic person who randomly gets tested? If they're ill, they have to be treated to the extent that the facility can manage their problem when they're there. In terms of if it's a mild case of COVID and they were tested positive, yes, they would have to be isolated in a facility. It doesn't necessarily have to be a facility per se. It could be a hotel room. It just has to be in some place where they would have to be isolated. The question that was raised, and I follow that reading of the CDC, I mean, that's something that we haven't encountered here just yet as to whether the person can come back to the ship or not. The risk that, of course, that's involved is that the ship is a closed operation, and between one port and the other, that can magnify. So you increase the risk because of all the shared facilities on a vessel that you have to just to live in a vessel with this one person in isolation in cabin, all the people they might encounter in the way will that increase the risk of it being spread versus them being placed in some place in the community where they can really be isolated. And generally, the isolation is from 3 to 5 days.
So you're saying that a COVID positive patient needs to be isolated for only 3 to 5 days?
Until after their symptoms are resolved.
Oh, after their symptoms have resolved and they've tested.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Assemblymember Decker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If it's okay, with the doctor referenced the American Cruise Lines plan, and I was wondering if we might get a sort of a synopsis of what that might look like. And I mean, in my mind, I have, you know, been hyper-focused on, you know, plans presented by, like, seafood processing plants and then so health mandate 10 and 17. And so there's similar sort of risks in the sense that seafood processing workers are in close quarters and in some cases living together. And so cruise ship has that similar sort of risk, yet it's also moving from community to community. So I was just curious, what is your plan for mitigating those risks?
We're in the process of submit. Excuse me, I think I'm muted. Am I muted or not?
You're on, sir.
Okay, now I'm unmuted, I think. In terms of the specific plan, we're working that out with American right now. I mean, we have a number of plans and contingencies suitable for the vessel and the itinerary and the company. We're working it out with American right now. But the bottom line is that making sure that one, that if once there's a case identified that you have, that is symptomatic, that you have a specific area to isolate that person until they can either be disembarked, or if in fact you can't manage the medical problem on board, they're disembarked. And then secondarily is to increase social distancing and put other people in quarantine until you can do a case contact study there on board. And provide that there's no more opportunities, so to speak, for asymptomatic transfer, or reduce that. In other words, you introduce quarantine measures on board the ship. If there's any communal dining, the dining stops. People stay in their cabins for longer periods of time, et cetera, et cetera. Those are the kinds of things that you do, as you do in the community, you're just doing a small community on the ship to reduce the likelihood of spread.
Assemblymember Decker, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you. That's helpful. I'm curious, would you be combining that with any kind of pre-board testing? So in other words, testing of passengers prior to when they're coming on, to at least know when they came on that they were not infected?
Yes, we're working that out as well. You know, the difficulty in all of this is, at what point do you require a test? And what do you advise people, as you do in the community, in terms of the precautions they have to take? But after the test returns, the result, let's say it's negative, what do they do to maintain themselves in that state? And that's the same thing we're going to be advising the guests who are coming. We'd like to think that they get a PCR test at some point before they join within a certain period of time, and then advising them during the travel period and during that time after the test, are they home, self-isolate themselves, so they practice protective measures en route to transit. And then we do an assessment when they get to the embarkation station, taking the temperature, getting a medical history, and reviewing their travel itinerary and things of that sort to see that they're stable to board. That's what we do on the pre-boarding side. Does that answer the question there?
I think so. Yeah, thank you. Assemblymember Gilbert.
Yes, I'm concerned about the passengers who test positive after they've embarked in Wrangell. What mechanism do you have in place to notify communities of a passenger who has entered their community and has later tested positive, sort of towards the end of the trip?
So that is one of the major undertakings right now. We're watching the news and the CDC priorities is how do we invest in a rigorous contact tracing program. And that's what you're talking about there. If somebody is identified, there's places, there's roles for the CDC in this, and also percolates back to the local communities and what it is and who do you have in place to interview people to find out what their contact level and the like is. So if a guest, let's say, tested at another point in time that they're ill before the next port or someplace down the itinerary, then we relate back to and look at where did they get off the ship. And then we would notify you, of course. And then it's a question of getting from the guest through an interview process of what their activities were like. And then you try and do a tracing that way. That's the simplest, the most effective way of doing it. But it's very labor intensive, and that's why it's not as easily done as just saying it. And a lot of it depends on our local capacity and the capacity of other people who are involved in the process of doing contact tracing from the federal government on down.
So for a follow-up question, so for the local communities that you visit, do you have contact numbers of medical personnel and city officials that you can relay that information to?
Well, yes, as we put the itinerary together, we will have contact people involved. Yes, so we can reach back and provide that information, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else have any other questions? And it doesn't necessarily have to just be for the doctor, just in general. I'm hoping that this discussion is broad in scope and not just strictly to what American Cruise Lines is doing. I'm going to come back to a point that is an important one for me, and that is that I worry sometimes that the cruise ship companies do not realize the limitations of our hospital. And obviously, I'm fairly intimate with the hospital, given that Lynn's my wife is the medical director. She likes to refer to it as a cottage hospital. You know, we have 5 acute care beds and 3 ER beds and some few swing beds and a long-term care. 3 doctors, no respiratory technician, 3 ventilators, one which is 20 years old and 2 that are only for transport. And I sometimes worry that the expectations of what the ships roll in with is far under what our capacity actually is. And so I always hope that we have backups on our backups, but if we are going to entertain cruise ships coming back to the harbors, I think we have to, and given that we are 100% on fisheries right now, we've moved forward and we are mandated. We do not, you know, this community's, there is no choice. The state has said we will open up to the fisheries. And so I just want to make sure that we are proceeding cautiously so we don't bring a crisis onto ourselves with our own capacity.
Mr. Mayor, thank you very much for inviting us to this meeting. I pulled up a map of Wrangell while we're talking. It really gave you insight into the community, hearing the discussion about the ambulances and some of the other little kind of issues that are being faced in smaller communities all across the country. The only way I can think of walking or threading the needle on this issue of capacity and managing it, and also managing the embarkation question, is that we know that COVID is a spectrum of illnesses. You can have people who are asymptomatic, don't even know that they've contracted and go about their daily lives, and activities of daily living aren't interrupted. You have people come down with mild flu symptoms and otherwise. What we can suggest as a possible middle road here is if we have a case where somebody is definitely ill, they have to be disembarked. But if we have somebody who has minor symptoms, one way of getting around this might be to just have the sampling done on board and have the specimen sent to the hospital or there and have it tested. And that's something that can be managed on board with, you know, antipyretics and fluids and that sort of thing. And that's a mild case. Well, they may not have to be disembarked there at the local facility. I think that's the question that you have there is, are we going to deplete our limited resources of hospital beds with somebody who's COVID positive and may not necessarily need to be in the hospital versus somebody who's critically ill and may have to be airlifted out? The latter case is straightforward. And the former case, that's the only thing I can suggest as a possible way to thread this needle, is that we can do the testing on board if we're suspicious and have the person isolated on board and implement our policies and our procedures. And then only if it's apparent that it can't be managed on board will we disembark them.
Yeah, I mean, because if they haven't disembarked, then there's no, they can't be denied coming back on. And then I guess that would have to, you know, there would be a decision that if we have a ship that has active cases on it, then that would come into the flying the quarantine flag. And or is that just a, Julie, maybe you can qualify that for me. Under mandate 10 of the state, which only applies to the fisheries at this point, if somebody, I know on a fishing boat, if you have an active, if somebody is sick and quarantined, then they are, I'm getting it right here, you trained me. If they're sick and they're quarantined, you have to fly the quarantine flag, and other vessels are not supposed to come, you know, there should be limited contact, correct? I think you're muted, Julie.
That's sort of right. So there's two times when you fly the flag. If you have someone from out of state that has come to the state and is still doing their 14-day mandatory quarantine, you fly that flag. Because not only that person, but the entire vessel is like a family unit at that time, and everyone is sort of under quarantine. Once the quarantine is finished, everyone is, you know, no one's ill, then you take the flag down. If someone becomes ill and either they're suspected of COVID because of their symptoms, or somehow it's known that you have a COVID case on board, you fly a flag, and you're supposed to try to put that person in isolation. For small vessels, that's very difficult because it's hard to have a space that's completely isolated from anyone else. Larger vessels, you put them in isolation. They have their own bed, their own head, you know, bathroom, and nobody touches them. But anyway, so that's specific to commercial fishing, and that's been a lot of discussion going into that. I'm sure specific to be outlined for cruise ships, but another one of my questions is, how does a cruise ship like abide by right now this 14-day mandatory quarantine for anyone coming into the state? I mean, does that assume that you're on a cruise ship for 14 days before you get off board, or does that assume B, that gets lifted and changed?
I believe that, Julie, I believe that all of the cruise lines are looking that the governor will be lifting that June 2nd or pre-June 2nd or shortly be lifting the intrastate travel quarantine. Interstate travel quarantine will be lifted by June 2nd. And because I don't, if the discussions that we had in the meeting with the small cruise ship managers, they clearly stated that if it's in place, it would be next to impossible for them to operate. And of course, the crew, you know, it just would be very difficult to operate with that in place. So I think they're looking at the governor lifting it. Assemblymember Larrabee, you've had your hand up for a bit. Sorry.
So any determinations about how the cruise ship organizations will function will be made at a state level. This is mainly informative for us. We don't have any means to make any determination about whether they stop here or not. Is that correct?
I'm going to let Lisa weigh in on that.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Assemblymember Larrabee, the first and only small cruise ship discussion with Commissioner Crum from the Department of Health and Social Services that we've had, Commissioner Crum encouraged the communities to start a dialogue with industry and to come up with some recommendations as to what needs to happen. And so that's what the Southeast courts are trying to do right now. The letter that you have, our expectation is that will, whatever iteration of letter comes out, would go to the state, would go to the governor and the commissioner of health, saying, you know, we are coming together, trying to create a set of protocols, and we are expecting that us moving forward, if we come up with a set of protocols between our communities, that the state would recognize those. So I think right now they're trying to leave it to us to handle this.
Does anybody else have any other questions or comments? Member Morrison.
Just a quick question. I did have a quick question. I'm sorry, it totally left my head. Should have written it down.
It'll come back.
It'll come back.
Assemblymember DeLong.
Hi, yes, thank you. And this is kind of just a general question. Are cruise ship passengers like begging to get on these boats? Or is capacity, are people canceling their cruises or still eager to go on? I just wonder about the cruise ship passenger, what the typical passenger is thinking or wanting to pursue by still coming given, this pandemic and things going around in each state individually. And so I guess that's just a general question to get in the head of for these cruise ship passengers. Are there many people canceling or what does that look like?
Michael, do you want to handle that one for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So I can't speak for the industry as a whole. I can speak specifically for American Cruise Lines and our bookings for the summer. So we certainly have seen a reduction in our guest count canceling due to concerns of COVID. Looking at the 11 departures that we have remaining for this season, we're looking at average numbers of about 77 to 75 guests. Some are a little lighter than that. So if you look at our ship, the American Constellation can carry 175 guests at full capacity. So we've definitely seen a reduction in that. But of those guests that have remained booked, as soon as we're able to give them the green light that we're able to cruise, we do have people continuing to call our office interested in knowing, you know, when can they cruise with us. So while we have seen a reduce in our overall demand, I mean, usually Alaska sells out for us, we still have, you know, a relatively healthy number of people that want to continue to cruise that are eager, not only in Southeast Alaska, but on the Columbia and Snake River, the Mississippi River, and the East Coast, where we operate primarily during the summer.
Thank you, Michael. Assemblymember DeLong, do you have a follow-up, or does that answer it for you?
That's great. For American Constellation, the demographic of your customers, where are they coming from, or is that again too broad of an answer? Or
No, I can answer that. So primarily our guests come from the United States. We have very few international visitors. Typically, if we have any international visitors, it's a charter between Australia or the United Kingdom. But 99% of our guests reside from the United States. If you want to get real specific, California, Texas, and Florida are three biggest producing states from a sales perspective. I can't speak on the demographics for the Alaska cruises, but in general, those are the three biggest producing states for us. But it's primarily guests that reside in the United States.
Thank you. I'm going to let Assemblymember Morrison go. She seems to have remembered.
I did remember. How many communities in Southeast are involved in getting this recommendation pulled together? Do you know, Lisa or Steve? I mean, who's working?
There were representatives from Ketchikan, Petersburg, Wrangell, Haines, Sitka, Juneau. I think Hoonah was on the line as well.
Skagway,
thank you. Yeah, so the most all.
Okay, that's just what I was wondering. If we're all going to try and operate on the same page, that would be helpful.
Assemblymember Decker.
Thanks. I had an interesting fact to share. One of the meetings this week with the seafood industry, it was noted that the first lawsuit has been filed against a vessel owner by the family of someone, the captain of the vessel that passed away due to COVID. it was, I guess, in Louisiana. The vessel was a support services vessel. I assume the oil service, the oil industry. And the captain had gotten off board in New Orleans, gone downtown, gotten back on board, and gotten sick. He didn't get off for a number of days before, and ended up passing away. And really, you know, there wasn't the protocols in place and some things like that. So, I mean, the fishing industry took note as, you know, you really need to not only have your protocols in place, but document them and train your crew and make sure you're monitoring that you're going through your protocols. So anyway, it's just an interesting note.
Thank you, Assemblymember Decker. Does anybody else have any other comments or questions on the small cruise ship stuff right now? I know we're going to be revisiting this again at a meeting. And of course, we're not taking any action tonight on anything, but I would encourage folks to reach out to Lisa or Carol if you have further questions. I see that nobody else has got any questions. I want to thank everybody that called in tonight. And I also want to recognize that the cruise ships are an important part of our economy. And Wrangell has worked hard at diversifying its economy. And since I moved here, it was a Milltown when I showed up, and I know that there's been people that have been working for 25 plus years to grow tourism. And so we won't take, you know, we won't take any action lightly. And I appreciate the efforts of everyone, and I appreciate American Cruise Line for reaching out to us and having these discussions. And we want to work together and keep everybody healthy. So thank you very much to the folks that called in. And I will totally understand if you guys want to sign off now and not listen to budget discussions on wastewater and water treatment. So thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. We appreciate you having us on the call. I mean, I was looking forward to items C and D, solid waste and wastewater. I actually really appreciate being towards the front of the agenda because I have had to wait till the end. And while I have learned a lot about various municipalities, I certainly appreciate our position in this agenda and also allowing us to depart the meeting. So thank you. I mean, anything that we can do while you guys continue to have these conversations, you know, please feel free to reach out to myself, Paul, Holly, or Dr. Dees. We're happy to answer those questions and continue the dialogue. So thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate your time. Okay.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. Thanks, Holly. And thank you, Doctor, for calling in tonight. I want to also thank folks that sent in letters and the folks that called in and listened in. I know there were some operators as well. So thanks to everybody.